Welcome to the 20% True Podcast, Season 2, Dubious Creatures, Episode 9, The Squonk. I'm Carolyn Rahaman. As a content warning, this week's episode deals with body image issues and bullying. If you need to skip it, that's fine. We'll be back next week. Camp Green Rock specialized in survival skills. They taught the campers to light fires and use a compass and tie knots, to track and snare animals and identify plants both dangerous and edible. They constructed shelters and learned first aid. They had CPR classes, so if the kids weren't too useless, they could end the summer with their certification. Every kid left able to swim, every kid left able to run, and every kid left able to hike with all their gear on their backs. It all looked nice on a brochure, but in practice, it meant that the campers slept in bunk beds most nights, in cabins with lazy ceiling fans. They had communal showers that were pretty nice for communal showers. There was always access to sunscreen and itch cream and band-aids. They had Sloppy Joes on Thursdays and waffles on Fridays in the dining pavilion. They had craft time, where they made lanyards and ceramic bowls to hold their parents' keys. Then there were always a good number of campers every summer who were just hopeless. Georgia always had to fish a couple of kids out of the lake and into her rowboat as they dog paddled and spluttered their way towards the buoy. Lane always had to comfort some kid sobbing over her unlit fire after darkness had fallen and everyone else was already snacking on s'mores. Tammy always had to hang back with a camper who just couldn't make it through a hike, with girls who huffed and puffed under their backpacks, red-faced and sweating, glossy-eyed until they doubled over with their hands on their knees, or stumbled and then sat down to rest and not get up until they were carried home, or who turned pale, ditched their backpacks in a panic, and upchucked into the bushes. Every summer, all the counselors were on alert on test day, which came a week before the end of camp. Before dawn, Josie would blindfold the campers, and Lacey would truck them all out into the woods and drop them off, telling them to make their way back to camp using all the skills they had learned. It actually wasn't that hard. The area was bordered on the south and east by the lake, the north by the road, and the west by a chain-link fence. They should hit a marker eventually and just follow it back. But of course, there was always some kid who thought they should cross the road or cross the lake. There was always a kid who walked in circles and then gave up, setting up a camp around noon and then settling in like they would just live there in the woods forever. Summers where only one kid didn't make it back by the deadline were considered successes. It was Viv's idea to get little tracking beacons to put in the kids' bags so finding them would be easier, but they could only afford about 10 and snuck them into the bags of the campers they deemed most likely to need them. They gave the campers weekly missions to track and find things in the woods, a specific flower, the most colorful rock, the largest fish. Sometimes they had to both find something and make something, like the week the campers had to find arrowheads and make spears, with points given for sharpness and best construction, or the week that they had to find rabbit tracks and make plaster molds. Each week there was a winner announced at the bonfire, and the winner got special privileges as long as they kept their title, privileges like not having to do dishes. Unbeknownst to most of the campers, the counselors ran their own missions among themselves. The winner got to go to town Saturday night in Lacey's truck. Town had cell phone reception. Lacey was the most senior counselor, had the best beach legs, and owned the truck, so she went to town every week. This meant that she had the best stocked collection of personal care items, and therefore looked the best and smelled the best. It was probably why she had the best beach legs. She was the one to devise the missions each week and to judge the offerings. Lacey declared that she didn't just pick her friends every week, that she was fair and just and unbiased. It's just that her friends were way better at all the missions than everyone else. Even if a dweeb happened to win the challenge, she promised she'd still give them a ride to town. They just better not expect her to hang out with them. And they better be at the truck at midnight or she was leaving their butts and they could hike home. Chelsea affirmed this when she won the week that they had to find the cutest baby animal without being killed by its mother. She brought back adorable pictures on her phone of adorable fox cubs, which beat everyone else's picture of the ducklings that hung out by the dock. Chelsea shared in a whisper that Lacey had not spoken a word to her on the way there or the way back. It was still worth it for the 4 hours of Wi-Fi, the strawberry milkshake at the diner, and the blister cream she'd bought at the general store. The cutest animal mission was a fluke, and generally agreed to be a failure. The missions usually weren't that nice. They were mostly things like the worst tie-dye shirt made by your campers, or the crudest thing you can whittle into a block of wood at craft time without getting caught. There was a lot of the worst smelling and the most embarrassing. There was a lot of what Lacey called adult humor, and a lot of making fun of each other or their campers or the adult staff. Josie came close to winning the most embarrassing piece of mail when she pulled a subpoena for Miss Russell, who owned the camp, to appear in court. But she was beaten by Tegan, who found a letter from one of her campers from their mom, which suggested in detail the best ways to deal with the camper's dandruff. It was stuffed under the camper's pillow. Josie had since felt guilty that she'd taken the subpoena, and that she'd shared it with the others. She wondered if she would have felt as guilty if she'd won. But this week, she had to win. She just had to. It was desperate. Josie had a nickname. It was Pants. She'd earned this by blowing through 4 pairs of shorts over the summer, all in horribly embarrassing ways. One pair she ripped, right through the seat, when one of her campers had slipped, tumbled, rolled toward the one cliff in the forest, and she dove for them, snagging their wrists before they fell, jerking as their little body hit freefall, so they were dangling, hanging in the air over 20-foot rocky drop. The kid was shrieking dead weight, and Josie clenched her teeth and pulled. She hauled the kid up with a rip that she thought was her arm coming out of its socket. Collapsed on the ground above the cliff, they clutched each other. She was breathless with fear and exertion, but the camper was still screaming. For a few seconds, she thought herself a hero. But then people had snickered. Framed as she'd been by the clear open sky, her back to the crowd of hiking campers and counselors, they'd all had a great view of her shorts splitting to reveal pale blue underwear, said to be the same color as the sky, like a hole had just opened up straight through her. 4 days later, the exact same thing happened again, but with a different camper who didn't scream as much, and a different pair of underwear. These were bright pink. At one point, she thought they were cute. She got roasted not just for her pants, but also for her campers being the clumsiest campers on the planet. The other counselors renamed the group the Lemmings. Then they started making comments about Josie's weight, and who did she think she was wearing shorts that tight? She spent a lot of time standing on an overturned bucket to see herself in the grungy mirrors over the sinks, checking the width of her thighs, the pudge of her gut. From certain angles, she could convince herself she wasn't fat. From certain angles, she wondered if the mirror had curved with age to make her look wider. But from most angles, she just felt bad about herself, wishing she could wear jeans and not die of heat stroke, or have everyone give her knowing, smug looks. Then she'd sat in unfortunately colored paint to another round of snickers, and as much as she tried, the stain would not come out. She tried to speckle the whole pair, make them look artsy, but everyone knew and thought her attempt at camouflage pathetic. The last pair were ruined as she and the Lemmings were dragged through a tug-of-war loss. The mud pit wasn't supposed to hurt, but she'd found the one jagged rock, and the shorts were shredded into a whole series of parallel tears down one butt cheek. The fall had also given her road rash, and a couple bad scrapes that needed cleaning and ointment and bandaging. She couldn't do it herself, and had lain on Miss Russell's sofa with her head buried in a pillow, silently crying with embarrassment, as Miss Russell patched her up and nattered excitedly about the next day's cookout, where the campers would set up grills over their fires and barbecue lunch for themselves. This year, Miss Russell had found corn on the cob still in their husks. Wouldn't that be delicious? Yeah, Josie muttered. Sounds good. She had no shorts left. All she had were a pair of plaid pajama pants that she had cut short. She took them off only after her campers had turned off the lights, and she slipped into her bunk as fast as possible so no one would know that she slept in just her underwear. It was only a matter of time, though, before one of the lemmings tried to start a fire in the cabin one night, and Josie had to run out from the cabin, mostly nude, to grab a bucket of water to douse the burning structure. But then everyone probably knew already. Her shorts were clearly pajamas, and she wore them every day, and they were not as durable as even her old betraying shorts had been. She was desperate to the point where if she didn't win the mission this week, she'd have to go to Miss Russell and beg for a ride into town, which the happy woman would freely give, but which would make Josie a pariah to all the other counselors. Only dweebs would go into town with Miss Russell for company. Only dweebs would bypass the traditions of Green Rock counselors and the strict social hierarchy thereof. It was possible she could hike there, but she couldn't do it and be home by curfew, so she needed someone to cover for her as she left after dinner on Saturday. Walk there in the dark, hope the stores were still open, and then hike the miles back to get home before reveille, to lead the lemmings through exhausted canoe time. Maybe she could hitchhike. No, the only way was to win. No matter what the challenge was, no matter how gross or how morally ambiguous, she'd pull her pajama shorts up over her fat butt, throw her hair up in a messy bun, and get it done. The counselors met around the bonfire after lights out, their weekly team meeting with Miss Russell, where they talked schedules and concerns. It was business, and for the most part, under Miss Russell's eye, they put their pettiness aside. Josie loved weekly meetings. But then it ended, and Miss Russell left them to have girl bonding, and Lacey took over to give them the week's mission. Lacey showed almost more leg than Josie had with shredded shorts. But she did it with confidence, long legs crossed and glistening in the firelight, as she sat on a little folding stool as though it were a throne. Josie's shorts were not flattering. They were baggy, and the bottom edge was already starting to ravel. Chelsea leaned in and whispered, "Roll up the bottom to make cuffs. That'll help." As discreetly as she could, Josie took the advice. "All right, girls," Miss Russell said, folding up her lawn chair to take it back with her into her house. "Have a good night, but not too good a night." She winked and nudged the small cooler she'd brought with her towards Tammy. As usual, it was filled with cold sodas, a special treat given like it was a big secret. Tammy broke into it as soon as Miss Russell left the circle of firelight, passing the cans around the circle. "Okay," Lacey said. "I know you're all dying to hear about Georgia's boyfriend's latest love letter." They giggled. Georgia hadn't sent a word to her boyfriend all summer, and he'd responded by writing progressively more dramatic letters to try to get her attention. She read them aloud each week for their entertainment, in the closest thing they had to watching a soap opera. "But first," Lacey said, "this week's mission. I know one person who's especially interested. Someone who's out of, what was it again, Josie? Deodorant?" Everyone snickered. Josie folded lower over her legs in a stupid attempt to try to hide her shorts. "This week's mission." Lacey let the moment hang in a dramatic pause, grinning around the circle, savoring the moment when she knew something that no one else did. "Ugliest animal." A few people groaned. Lacey held up a hand. "Wait, wait. There's a twist. This time, no pictures. I want an actual animal. You have to catch it and bring it in." That got them talking. Bringing in an ugly animal shouldn't be that hard. After all, lizards were ugly. Fish were ugly. Slugs were ugly. It's not like they had to stare at a rabbit. But I bet you get more points for a mammal. "But the mammals aren't ugly. You not only have to catch a rabbit, but an ugly rabbit." "A possum, maybe?" Chelsea leaned over again and whispered, "Georgia's phone is out of batteries. That's why Lacey said no pictures." Before Josie could comment, she heard Tris say her name. Sort of her name. "Pants! Maybe you could make a rabbit ugly by dressing it in your wardrobe!" People snickered. Josie's soda suddenly tasted stale. If that's what it took, she'd do anything. She set snares the next day while she hiked with the lemmings. There was no rule against telling the campers about the counselor's missions, but there was unspoken secrecy. But no one paid any attention to the lemmings, and Josie was too desperate to be stealthy. The lemmings crowded around as she showed them how to set a snare. "It's a competition between the counselors," she said. "It's supposed to be a secret." The camper's eyes lit with excitement, and she realized that being at the bottom of the pile together had given her the most loyal camper she'd ever had. After the second snare, they took it on themselves to set their own, and by the end of their walk, they'd set about 24. At swim time in the afternoon, Josie gave half of her attention to lifeguarding and half to fishing. That night, she snuck out with a flashlight to look for the nasty-looking beetles that hid under rocks. And so the week went. Her shorts got thinner and more precarious. Her camper started bringing her worms. And luckily, the other counselors all thought the lemmings were so lame that they just thought it was a freak thing that they did. None of the snares caught anything. By Thursday, Josie was practically vibrating with nerves, worried that the best she could do was the spiky yellow caterpillar that she and the lemmings had found on their foraging expedition and put into a makeshift terrarium in their cabin. But the good news was that the other counselor seemed to have as little luck as she did. Friday, she drank too much of the bitter rocket fuel that Miss Russell called coffee and skipped breakfast to buzz her way through the snares and then through the fish traps. No luck, and no luck, and no luck. And then she had to oversee craft time, and then dishwashing, and then the lemmings jogging test, and then there was dinner, and all Josie had was a caterpillar that looked like it had eyes on its back. The lemmings looked more desperate than ever, like they'd let her down, like they'd failed her by failing to find an ugly enough animal. She gave them a tortured smile that didn't reassure, and set out for one more desperate check of the snares. No luck, and no luck, and no luck. Josie swore loudly and spun as a twig snapped behind her. It was just Tegan, and Josie relaxed until she found herself tackled to the ground. She shrieked and tried to wrestle Tegan off, as the other girl wrestled for Josie's shorts. Oh God, her shorts! Stop! Tegan cackled, throwing her weight and pressing a splayed hand over Josie's face, shoving at her chin, pushing her away while clawing at her drawstring. Josie grunted, then twisted, then hurled herself, throwing Tegan free to roll a few feet in the dirt and come to a stop still cackling. Josie was on her feet in a second. What the hell, Tegan? Tegan could barely breathe through her laughter. Your face! Were you trying to steal my shorts? Of course! I want to win tonight, and your shorts on a rat would be the ugliest. Josie felt dizzy. She wrapped her arms around herself, feeling suddenly chilled, suddenly sick to her stomach. Like maybe Tegan had hit her in the gut with her bony elbows. Tegan pushed herself to sitting, and Josie took a step back. Tegan held up a hand in surrender, finally catching her breath. She tilted her head to the side and gave Josie an appraising look. Come on, taking your shorts isn't that bad. Harriet was saying that she could just wrestle you into a bag and drag you to the judging. Tears welled in Josie's eyes, squeezing out as soon as she blinked. The tears were hot, burning their way down her cheeks to gather, itching under her chin. Tegan's face fell, and Josie ran, bolting into the woods, branches whipping against her arms and legs, snagging at the worn fabric of her pajama shorts and making her cry harder. She ran until she couldn't see through the tears, and then she ran more, until she tripped and fell and couldn't bring herself to get up. Curling into a ball in the roots of a tree, dirt softening to mud against her cheek, her body shuddering. She sobbed until she felt too sick to keep sobbing, until she gave herself the hiccups, and then leaked out more tears over how every hiccup was a punch in her gut. The sun began to sink, and while her sorrow didn't quit, her sobs did. And that's when she heard a sound. At first it sounded like an echo, but as she quieted to listen, it kept going. A wail leaked out between heaving, labored breathing. She pushed up to wobbly feet, wiped slick hair and dirt from her face, and headed for the sound, placing each foot carefully. The crying got louder, but as she peered around one final tree, instead of a lost camper or another bullied counselor, she saw an animal. The ugliest animal she had ever seen. It looked almost like a pot-bellied pig, but somehow misproportioned. It was hard to tell because its skin was too large, hanging with deep, wrinkling folds that hung over its legs. Not only did it have too much skin, but the skin itself was wrong, blistered and boiled, flaky and with patches of thin, coarse hair. It squealed when it saw her and shoved itself back, in too much of a hurry to get up, so it scrambled in a crab walk, scooting backwards on its butt, sobbing all the harder. Josie cried too. She didn't even know why, just that the creature was so ugly there was probably something wrong with it, And because her shorts were dirty now and everyone was so horribly and forgivingly mean, and the only thing she wanted in the whole world was a ride to a one-stoplight town. The creature cried even harder, but stopped trying to escape. It squeezed its eyes shut and cried with her, her misery giving it company. Snorting back a runny nose, Jessie shouldered off her backpack, unzipped it, and scooped the creature into it. The thing didn't protest, it just cried. It cried as she hiked back to camp, as she checked in at the mess pavilion to see that dinner and weekly awards had long ended. It quieted as she marched to the bonfire, but she could feel its small stream of tears soaking into the small of her back, running down the back of her legs, getting the butt of her pants wet. So it was still crying. Miss Russell had already left, meaning Josie would be in trouble for missing the weekly meeting. The girls fell silent as Josie walked up, taking in the dirt in her hair and her puffy eyes. Tegan shied back and pulled the hood of her sweatshirt over her head. Lacey sat straighter. She looked almost concerned, almost scared. "Josie? Are you okay?" It was the first time Lacey had used her name in a month. Without a word, Josie shrugged out of her backpack. She found it lighter than it had been. Maybe the beast had gone to sleep. Maybe it had escaped. When she opened it, she found it empty. But no, not empty. Full of water that sloshed at the bottom and had soaked through the fabric all the way up to the shoulder straps. The creature had turned into a puddle of tears. And so had all her hopes of new pants. "Josie?" That was Chelsea, who stood up, looking ready to fly across the bonfire and catch Josie up in her arms. Josie straightened. She rolled back her shoulders. With puffy, hardened eyes, she looked straight at Lacey. She would not turn into a puddle of tears. She would not wear these shorts a single day more. "Give me a ride to town tomorrow." It was not a plea. It was not a question. Lacey nodded so slightly that it might have been a trick of the firelight. Josie shouldered her backpack and headed back to her cabin, a dozen counselors staring after her in silence. The 20% True podcast was written and produced by me, Carolyn Rahaman. Music was composed by Kamiku. If you like the show, please rate and review on iTunes so new people can find it. Follow the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/20percenttrue, where you can leave comments and ask questions. Check out my website, 20percenttrue.blogspot.com, for updates, thoughts on writing, and book reviews. Or follow me on Twitter at Carrie and the Hits.